Yoso Bhagava Araham Sama Sambuddho Svakato Yena Bhagavata Dhammo Suppatipanno Yassa Bhagavato Sabbaka Sangho Tamayam Bhagavantam Sadhammam Sasangham Ime hi sakare hi yataratam Aropite hi abhipujayama Sadhuno bante bhagava Suchira parinibhutopi Vachima janata nukampamanasa Ime sakare dugata panakarabute Patiganhatu Amhakam digaratam hitaya sukaya Araham sama sambuddho bhagava Buddham bhagavantam abhivademi Svakato bhagavata dhammo dhammam namassami Supatipanno bhagavato sabbaka sangho sangham namami Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Iti piso bhagava araham sammasambuddho Vija charana sampanno sugato lokavidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanam buddho bhagava Tamaham bhagavantam abhipujayami Tamaham bhagavantam sirasa namami Svakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko ehipasiko Opanayiko pachatam veditadbo vinyuhi Tamaham dhammam abhipujayami Tamaham dhammam sirasa namami Supatipanno bhagavato sabbaka sangho Ujupatipanno bhagavato sabbaka sangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato sabbaka sangho Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Yadidam Chattari Purisa Yugani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttaram Punyaketam Lokasa Tammaham Sangham Abhipujayami Tammaham Sangham Sirasanami. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as the mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
This for venerable is not a good tap.
That's for me. Name on it, maybe.
This is a very nice note. Dear venerable nuns, thank you for inspiring us just by your mere presence. May you all live happy and be free from suffering. Mega metta. That's very nice. This one is for you. This one. I come home after a stressful and tiring day at work. I sit down to meditate and go straight into dullness and think I have a bad meditation. Next time I come home like that, I switch on the TV instead. How do I deal with this skillfully? I think when you come home after a tiring day, you shouldn't go straight into meditation. You should have a shower, relax. Yeah. Relax. So after you have relaxed, then only you go into meditation, because firstly your mind is very busy and your body is tired. All you need is a rest. So when you relax, you are resting. Then after that, you go into meditation, that will be much better. Okay, happy? Okay, your turn. This one is yours. You can tell the story.
Does this work? Oh, yeah. Well, this is a very easy question. Dear Venerable Santacharya, I understand that there are no other nuns or bhikkhunis close to where you live. Do you have any practical difficulties living by yourself to follow the practice and to keep the Vinaya rules? Well, not really. Is that good enough? I have some wonderful Sri Lankan monks who live about 40 minutes away, who I visit on a irregular basis, who are very supportive. I live with my 90-year-old mother as her carer. That's why I'm there, not here or at Santi or something. And she is a very, very kind and easy person. In fact, she's very fond of saying, we've been to live together for 7 years now and never had an argument, which is very true. We've had lots of differences of opinion, but no arguments. Isn't that nice? So it's actually just, I have some lovely people, some Australian people, some Malaysian people, one Singaporean, and a large number of Sri Lankans who come and support me. So I don't really have too much trouble keeping the rules, actually. But Arjan suggested that I tell you a story about a robber who came into my bedroom one night. Would you like to hear that story? So, first of all, before I tell the story, I want to ask you, if a robber came into your bedroom at 9 p.m. at night, what would you do? Now, way too many people, when I ask that question, they answer, I would scream. Right? Lots of people say that. Or some other people say, I would tell them to go away or something.
Quiet.
So, however, I thought to myself, let's roll back a bit. Before the robber. Considerably before. And I'm a work in progress. Which means once upon a time, 20 years ago, I was well known as an extremely angry person. Now I'm known as a kind person. How did I get from there to here? Well, possibly because of my past earlier this life, not past life, but past of this life, I used to shout a lot. It happens that at least once a year, somebody comes and scolds me. Rah, 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 rah. You Satachari, you're a terrible man. You shouldn't do that. The last time was Boxing Day, so I'm about due. And I thought to myself, I would like to have a good karma response to this, you know, not just the default response that comes up from being a person in the world. And I thought, well, what does the Buddha say about this? And so I looked at the simile of the saw sutta, which is Majjhima Nikaya 21, that specifically addresses this. And in this sutta, it's very long, and the beginning part is all about the monks arguing about the nuns. Has anything ever changed? Probably not. No. So they're arguing about the nuns and criticizing each other. And the Buddha comes along. So here in very particularly is the situation where criticism, harsh criticism is happening. And what does the Buddha say to do? He said, if you should get angry with them, then you're not following my teaching and training. And then he does what, back when I was working in professional life, we called worst case scenario. And he said, now just imagine if bandits grabbed you and with a two-handled saw, sawed off your arms and legs. Now, sawing sounds slow, right? This is not a quick process. And then he further says, if you got angry with those bandits, you would not be following my training. You should train thus. My mind will remain unaffected. I will not blurt out any bad words. I will abide with a heart full of compassion. And starting with that very bandit, I will radiate loving kindness over the whole world. While they're chopping my legs off, right? Does seem like a high bar. But then he goes on to say, now, if you contemplate and practice thus, can you see any type of verbal criticism that you couldn't cope with? And they, of course, go, no, Bhante. So I thought, right, I'm going to imagine myself doing that. And so the way I've trained myself is I imagined again and again, and I rehearsed it as if I was going to put on a play, right? And I rehearsed it. I imagined somebody going, blah, 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 and I would go, okay, suffering, yep, suffering, compassion for me, because I'm pretty selfish underneath all this, right? So I start with compassion for me. I can do that. Now, compassion is a wholesome mind, right? So at least I'm now in a wholesome mind. And once I've got compassion for me, ow, ow, it's not very nice to be shouted at. May I be free from suffering. Then I'm ready to look at that person and go, you know, if they weren't suffering, they wouldn't be doing that, right? And then have some compassion for Mr. or Mrs. Shouty. Oh, poor thing. They wouldn't be shouting if they weren't suffering, right? And then I can radiate loving kindness. So I mentally rehearse this again and again and again. So roll forward a few years, and I've been rehearsing this for a while. Sometimes successfully, sometimes not, you know, way it goes. And then I look up for my book, and the door opens, and this extremely scruffy looking man walks in with his right hand in his pocket. I discovered later on he had a knife in his pocket. I didn't know immediately, but as soon as he walked in, you know what I saw? I saw a poor, incompetent person who doesn't know how to support themselves without having to do the very scary thing of walking into somebody else's house. He looked afraid. He looked like he really didn't know how to support himself. And my heart immediately filled with compassion, and I felt so sorry for him. Oh, you poor thing. Fancy having to attempt to rob a nun. I mean, honestly, how incompetent is that, right? Seriously. So I said to him, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, I'm lost." And I thought, oh, in so many ways. And I said, "Yes, but why are you lost in my house?" It's not actually my house, it's my mum's house, but slip of the tongue there. And he said, "I'm hungry." Oh, I said, "Well, you know, the food's in the kitchen, not in the bedroom." And I walked straight towards him and he backed up. I said, "Come on, come to the kitchen." And he followed me into the kitchen looking really lost and confused, not at all quite coping with this really weird kind response, but peaceful. And I opened the pirikara cupboard, okay? Pirikara is all the extra stuff that they put in the cupboard at the monastery that might get eaten one day. You know, Weet-Bix and packet noodles and stuff. And I said, "Okay." And I pulled out some shopping bags and I filled up the shopping bags with, you know, Weet-Bix and milk. And I said, "Oh, I'm Santachari. Who are you?" He said, "Oh, I'm George." "Hi, George." And I'm putting juice in and tea and coffee and sugar. And I'm like, "Wow, this is really heavy now. Have you got far to go?" He's like, "Oh, no, I'm only in the flat down the road." And as it happens, I know precisely which flat he means. There's no question about which flat it is. Okay, yeah, that's not very far. You'll be fine. And off he went, peaceful, happy. "See you, George. And now, listen, George, if you're hungry again, come during the day and knock on the door." And he did. 3 more times he came. After 10 days, we did notify the police because, you know, it was a trespass and the police need to know what's going on. Anyway, 10 days later, the police ring us and say, "Oh, that George fellow, you don't have to worry about him anymore. He's in jail now because he was involved in a stabbing." Now, that could have been us, right? That could have been me got stabbed. If I had had an aggressive, or if I just screamed, or if I was aggressive, that's what was in his pocket. That's why he had his hand in his pocket, because he was holding a knife in there. And when I gave him all that food and kindness, he let go of the knife and accepted the food. So he was able to leave without doing any bad karmas, not, at least not in our house. And I feel pleased about having done a good karma. Yeah? So, you know, if we can tame even a robber, surely just an annoying person, yeah? Really? So that's my little robber story.
Can I just interrupt for a moment? Can we also get the nuns to introduce yourself? Because I think the people online may not know who is who.
Oh, shall I start?
So, yeah, just maybe say your name.
So my Pali name is Soma. And should I say something about myself? Yeah. So I was born in Sri Lanka to a Buddhist family. And came here about 7 years ago. I didn't really practice Buddhism in Sri Lanka other than go to the temple with my parents. That's because they wanted me to go. Then when I came here, I was working in Sri Lanka and all of that. Then when I came here, my life suddenly got simplified. I'm not really sure why or how. But and then I started questioning. I just remember having lots of questions in my head, like, why was I born? What am I doing here? Like one day I remember asking from Ajahn Brahmali, whose idea of a joke is this? You know, you just put people on earth and then they have to suffer and struggle. And but I didn't know that I put myself in here. But anyway, so I started going to Dhammaloka for Ajahn Brahm's talks. And then I got the admin role there, as in work in the office. I started to meditate, and I just like you guys, I came on retreat, and just like this evening, the nun spoke, and I was like blown away. And I found that Buddhism gave me the answers, or at least not the answers, but not always, but it helped me understand things that are happening. The constant dissatisfaction you'd feel even though you have everything you want in life. You have good friends, you have good family, you love your job, and yet it feels empty. And slowly, I mean, I sort of knew I wanted to, not sort of, I wanted to be a nun the moment I saw them. I don't know how or why. But I also knew I wasn't ready for it. This was like 6 years ago. So I started to visit Dhammasara, come here more often. And slowly, took baby steps and here I am.
Hello. My name is Vimuthi, and I'm a baby nun. I was only ordained, November? A few months ago. But I've been wanting to be a nun for the last 20-odd years, so it's taken me a very long time, including, as Ajahn Brahm said earlier, a fairly long time teaching in public schools here in Western Australia, which was great because it was really hard in the beginning and then it got easier. And it was great training and great practice. And like Venerable Soma, I obviously didn't feel quite ready. But that's something that doesn't leave you, all of you who are thinking about it. You'll never stop thinking about it until you do it in this life or the next. Just do it in this life. You don't know what happens in the next life, which is why I did it. Because I thought, I'm going to die, and the people that I love are going to die. And one way or another, it's going to hurt. And I don't know. I have no certainty that in my next life, I'll find someone like Ajahn Brahm again or have these conditions to practice again. And so I eventually took steps and let a lot of things go that were difficult to let go. But I have absolutely no regrets. Just so happy to be at Dhammasara. And it's a bit strange being up here because I'm more used to being down there and some of your faces are very familiar. I won't say any more. This is going to be a very long night.
It's your turn, but you've got a mic. Look. No, your mic's on. Yeah. She doesn't need the microphone. Please introduce yourself and tell something about yourself. No hearing aid. go to me?
Yeah, I know. I heard you.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
This one, I think all of us can answer if one by one, if we want, otherwise can take another. Yeah. Dear Venerables Gotami, Santacharya Soma, and Vimuti, could you please share your inspiration for choosing a monastic life? Also, could you please share some of the challenges you fall in your meditation practice? The inspiration to choose monastic life was when my children, I had four sons. Oh, yeah. She asked me to introduce myself. I bet. Yeah. Well, you all have know my name is Gotami, and we migrated from Malaysia in 1989. So that was about 31 years ago. And I have four sons. When we came here, I was 47 years old. And at first, we don't know anyone. And then slowly, we meet other Malaysians. And they told us that there is a Buddhist center in Damaloka. So we used to visit there every Friday. Listening to the senior monks giving talk is so inspiring, because Buddhism is talking about life, and whatever they tell us, the monks tell us, it relates very much to our life. And I got very, very interested. And slowly, we got to know that we can feed the monks in Bodhinyana Monastery. So we went there every week. I went with my sister, and I went there with my husband, and my sister with her husband. So our inspiration start growing, and then after that, I learned meditation there at Damaloka, and meditation really blew me away. I really love it. So I'm a busy housewife, but every night after I finish cooking, I go to my dressing room, switch off the light, sit there by myself. Oh, so excited, so excited. Yeah. And so I carry on like that. And it's the main thing for choosing a monastic life is meditation. Yeah. You really have a grip on me, you know. Every day I must meditate, and it's so nice. But then I also must think of my husband. Because usually at night I would sit with him and watch the TV. But when I became more interested in Buddhism, I wasn't interested in the TV. But I just sit there with him because I'm used to it, and I don't want to make him feel, you know, abandoned or something. So I sit with him. So I go inside the room, meditate. After half an hour, I think I should go out and sit with him. So I go out and sit with him. And the challenges I meet in meditation. If you are very happy, as Ajahn Brahm say, everything is going on like a song, then your meditation is good. But if there are some problems that you come across, it seems to come up every time when you meditate. So those are the challenges. Yeah, but this is something, we can always work with. And also must have the time to meditate. So don't have to do so much work at home. Like if you cook, just cook. Quite simple. No need to be every time make a big meal, and that will tire yourself out, and also less time for you for yourself to meditate. Yeah. And when I took up meditation, my children were all big and working, so I'm okay in that respect. Yeah. So what else? Yeah. Those are the challenges. Make your life simple. Simple. Don't be so too particular. Yeah. And don't take things too seriously. Otherwise, you have problem. Just let it be. Take it easy. Yeah. Okay? You want to answer this? Or you want to take the new one?
So I'm Venerable Santachari. I was born in Adelaide to English parents, who are also immigrants, like everybody who's not an Aboriginal, I guess. I grew up in a very, very devout Catholic family. So we didn't just go to church on Sunday. We sometimes went on Wednesdays. We sometimes went on Saturdays. We went to midnight mass. My mum used to do novenas. Do you know what a novena is? Okay, yeah. You seen the Christian prayer beads? Yeah? With the cross on them? Well, a novena... Well, to do that's a rosary, okay? So you do 10 Hail Marys, 3 Our Fathers, 10 Hail Marys, 3 Our Fathers, 13 times. That's doing the rosary. To do a novena is to do it 9 times. So my mum used to do novenas. So clearly a very, very religious family. I went to a Catholic primary school with nuns, and when I was a kid I wanted to be a nun. So wanting to be a nun from this big. When I was 14, I fell into serious disenchantment and disillusionment with the Catholic Church because I found out about the Inquisition, you see. And that was the end of it for me. Me and Catholicism, meh. So I went searching for another path. And... sometimes I looked in all the wrong places because, it was the 70s, so I tried sex, drugs and rock and roll. I went into that very intensively. Not a good result, honestly. I was not pleased with the result of that. I checked out the Hare Krishnas and they went, oh, female, go to the kitchen. I went, don't I get to... have the orange robes and the bumpy drum thing? No, go to the kitchen. I'm like, maybe not. I learnt to meditate with the Wiccans. That's the witchcraft people. They taught me to meditate. And yes, I know the witches taught me to meditate. But I felt the goddess worshipping and the valuing the divine feminine was a really useful and healing thing for me. But eventually I realised that they were missing Sila. Right? That emphasis on virtue was missing in Wicca. So I kept on keeping on. And then I had a Jewish boyfriend, so I thought I'd check out Judaism. And I went to see the rabbi, and he went, "Get thee to the kitchen." And this is how you cook kosher food. So I thought, uh-huh, okay, whatever. And at that time I discovered Buddhism, and I discovered Wat Buddha Dharma, because I was living in Sydney at that time, and I went on retreat there, and there was a nun in brown who had a really long Pali name, and that's 20 years ago now, so I have no way of remembering that great long Pali name. Whoever you are, sister, thank you. And she really helped me with some meditation problems I had. I kept meditating, you know, it was good. I liked meditation, you know. Oh, and I joined the Suma Ching Hai International Meditation Association from Vietnam. That was before the Jews and after the witches. And yeah, I tried everybody, right, except Islam, because I thought, nah, really, just nah. And then I found Buddhism, and it was like, yes, this is what I'm looking for. Boom. It's what I've been looking for the whole time. That nun could answer all my questions about meditation. Yes. Okay. Right. So I started going to the Blue Mountains Insight Meditation Center, and you know what they said? Get thee to the kitchen. However, they also said, yes, you can ordain. Oh, okay. As long as you be a sayale. Oh, all right. Okay. Whatever. And I'm thinking about that, you know. And I don't know. I'm not sure. So I went with another friend, and I was in the Mardi Gras. That was fun. Check that out too. I thought I'd check that side of life out. You know, I'm going to try out everything. So I tried out being gay too, but that didn't work either. But I did have fun in the Mardi Gras. And then I went to this retreat with Seattle Ulakana, who I thought, oh, I don't know about these guys in dresses, you know. Am I supposed to take them seriously? Guys in dresses with people bowing at them seems a bit kinky to me. But maybe he's actually a holy person. I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't know. But I'm aware it's possible that there's real holy people in the world. Yeah? So if this is a holy person, then I will definitely bow. If it's just a guy in a dress, then no. Nah. So that was my decision, and then I'm sitting on the bench outside waiting for my interview, and I'm thinking, are there arahants in the world? Because I'd been listening to the teachings and they seem really good. Are there actually arahants in the world, and is it possible for somebody like me to become an arahant? Okay. So that's what was really, I was just thinking those two questions over and over. And then it was my turn. And by the way, this Seattle doesn't speak English, or didn't. He's passed away now. Didn't speak English and had a translator. So I walk in the room and this guy's emanating light. And I'm like, whoa! Down to the ground, shaking. And I'm a bit of a motor mouth, you know. So I get up and he's like, the translator's like, okay, give your report, you know, and there's a distinct Mahasi-style report, you know, and I'm just like, I couldn't say anything. I couldn't speak, which is really weird for me. And then the monk spoke to the translator. The translator looked confused and argued with the monk. And the monk spoke more firmly. And looking even more confused, the translator turned to me and said, Sierra says, there are, it is, don't give up. Do you remember my two questions? Now, I had thought them outside the room in English. There are, it is, don't give up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to become a nun, that's it. It's possible, right? Now, it was another few years before I actually became a nun, because this was 2005, so it was before this, and I was visiting Santi, and I went there for the Bhikkhuni conference in 2008, and I was thinking, oh yeah, I can do this. And then there was the famous slash infamous 2009 ordination, and all the controversy around that, and I was terrified. I thought, oh, with my weird background, I better not be one of the first ones. No, they'll be under too much scrutiny. I know, I'll go to Myanmar and become a Sele. These other monks are saying, you don't need the Patimokkha, you don't need the Bhikkhuni ordination, you can become enlightened just being 10 precept. I'm like, okay, well, let's try this for myself. Because, you know, I was into try it. Try it before you buy it, right? So I went and became a Sele. And what I saw for myself was that those women weren't protected by the Patimokkha. They weren't protected by the Vinaya. And so they weren't able to have the same opportunity for awakening as those of us who are protected by the Patimokkha and the Vinaya. I saw for myself directly the situation for the 8 and 10 precept nuns. I asked some of the Burmese people in Burma, Myanmar, what am I if I'm not a monastic, if I'm not Sangha? Because they said, oh, you're not Sangha. I said, what am I if I'm not Sangha? They said, you're a laywoman who took off her hair and put on robes. Okay, right, fine. I'll be going back to Australia then. And so I came back here, and because I was a bit fearful, I was too worried to apply to Dharmasara, because I heard a rumour that they had an age limit, and I thought, oh, I'm too old. And then I met Ayatollah Loka, and I went to America and trained there, and she gave me the going forth. And when I came back to Australia after that, I went back to Myanmar in these robes, actually, which was very controversial. I thought I'd gone there to do a retreat with Pa'uk, which I did, and was fantastic. Oh, best retreat. Perhaps not better than this one, but very good. 6 months with Pa'uk. And I thought I'd gone there to meditate, but apparently I'd gone there to give about 200 or 300 women the opportunity to talk to a woman in these robes about ordination for women. Every day someone wanted to talk to me about it. So I came back to Adelaide, agreed to look after my mum, started visiting the Sri Lankans, and after a few years they said, Swamina Mahansa Mahindasara Taro said to me, "Nun, you should have the Upasampada." "Amabante," he said, "we will send you to Rangiri Dambola." I said, okay, but maybe I'll talk to the Australian nuns first. He said, okay, you do that. So I called up Ayat Upeka in Newbury, and she said, come to the Sakyadita meeting. And Aya Hasapana was there, and Aya Naroda was there, and a bunch of other bhikkhunis were there. And I told them that the monks had said I should have the Upasampada, and they said, well, we're having one at Santi. Come on down. So I did, and here I am. So thank you to those Sri Lankan monks. They've taken great good care of me, and I appreciate it very much. So now I've been a bhikkhuni since 2016. You could probably tell I started out doing mahasi practice, that the dry vipassana, and I did just over a year in the pink robes in Myanmar in a meditation monastery, and I hit the dukkanyanas because my mind was not used to wholesome states. And so I got stuck in the insight perception of suffering and the insight perception of disgusting nature of reality. And I really didn't have enough joy in the practice, so I really couldn't tip over into jhana because there wasn't enough joy. It was all dry vipassana. That was the obstacle, right? I was getting lots of insight and lots of really great insight experiences, but I wasn't getting joy. And so I was like a roadblock without joy. So when I came back to Australia, I thought, oh, everybody keeps asking me about Ajahn Brahm. I better find out how he practices. And I found out that he teaches joy and happiness and contentment and jhanas, and I thought, right. So went back to the beginning, basically, and had to start again. So that's what I'm developing now, joy and happiness and kindness. I'm just trying to become a kinder person.
Well, this says, tell us about how you came to be nuns, what you were doing, and I think we already mentioned that one. Yeah. I actually can't answer this question. It says, can you briefly explain why the Bhikkhuni Sangha slowly disappeared after the Buddha passed away? Does anyone want to have a go, or shall we leave it to Ajahn Brahm? Yeah. I think these are for Ajahn.
Well, they say Dear
Ajahn. Yeah, Dear Ajahn, they say. From yesterday, probably. This is an easy one. Do you wake up at 4 a.m. with gusto? not with gusto, but yeah. Sort of struggle out of bed.
Okay, I'll read the question out. Dear Venerable Vimuti, during your career as a teacher, before ordaining, did you get a chance to pass on any useful advice to your students based on Dhamma? I did not mean teaching Buddhism as a religion, but aspects like meditation. Do you have any advice to current or future Buddhist teachers that could be beneficial to them and the students? Thank you, much metta. I did sometimes get a chance to teach a little bit of meditation in schools. Not very often. Once I volunteered to do a couple of lunchtime sessions, and the very first session I had a massive crowd come along. And then I said to them all, but you have to be very quiet, and most of them disappeared. So that's the tricky bit. I was a primary school teacher, so I taught anywhere from kindergarten, so 3-4-year-olds to 13-year-olds. And I would say slowly, and I don't know if this is a teacher or someone wanting to be a teacher that's asking, but I'd say slowly, baby steps, and know your kids. and know the culture of your school and what you can and can't do. In the beginning, I very enthusiastically tried teaching meditation to very small children, and it's very challenging. You have to lower your expectations a lot, and you have to be prepared to learn as you go along yourself, because you'll see what works and what doesn't. And also they're just so restless, you know, mostly, and especially when they're very young. And you just have to, you know, what's beneficial, it says here, what could be beneficial to them, meaning the teachers. You have to cultivate a huge amount of patience and loving kindness if you want to try and teach meditation to kids in schools, no matter how old they are, because they are like our minds. It'll be challenging, but it's also how you present it. You know, what language you use, what bribes you offer. Let's be serious here. Sometimes you have to offer a few bribes. You know, I have memories of walking around, because there's one memory of, you know, children, you know, just say, make yourselves comfortable wherever, and they were very, very small. So I knew it wasn't going to work if they weren't quiet. So I'd be like, oh, you're just, you know, let's say her name was Jane. Jane's just so quiet. She's not disturbing anybody. Well done, Jane. I'm going to give Jane a sticker after this. And so, of course, everybody else is like, oh, stickers. And initially, you know, that's not the goal, obviously, but you need to start somewhere. I have this one memory, year threes, which is a good age to do something like this, because they have some sense of independence, and they also haven't got to that stage where they are, you know, want to fight everything. They're still enthusiastic. And I remember doing a loving kindness and using a lot of visualization, and then, you know, afterwards, to bring it home, you know, you might do a little activity where they might draw what they visualized. And after the meditation, bringing the kids out, this one girl, you know, she had her hands on her desk and she slowly put up her, as she brought her head back up and opened her eyes, she turned to her friend and said, "Wow, that takes all the anger away." I'll never forget that. That was just such a beautiful thing. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do. And it's definitely beneficial for all concerned. Go slowly and try different things and see what resources you can use. And if they don't want to do it, you can't make them. You know, you have to go and play cricket or something instead. So it's how you have to really know your kids and think about how you're going to present it. And don't have any expectations of yourself or them. Just small steps. I hope that helps.
I've been told that we should finish by 8 o'clock, and it's 8 o'clock already. Okay. Thank you for listening. And we do three sadhus, okay? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
And thanks to James from Singapore for the socks. See these socks? They're arrived in the mail from Singapore. So I think somebody called James in Singapore posted these socks to me in Adelaide. So thank you. Thanks, Singapore, for the socks.
Actually, maybe before we go, I have one last question for Vera Vimuti. What did your parents think when you told them you're going to become a nun? What would they say if they were in the hall?
I think they would say, well done. Yeah, if they were in the hall, they are in the hall.
So should we ask them?
Only if they want to be asked.
Would you want to say something, Nanda?
Thank you. And we are very happy, and I told Bhante Sujato, because Bhante Sujato has been conducting a three-month... he did that for 3 months through a Sri Lankan group, and that's a Zoom session. So he asked me, actually, Anand, he must have seen my name because there was a list, "Oh, your daughter has finally done it." And I know our daughter was right from the very beginning of Sutta Central, she was part of that with Bhante Sujato. So he knew Venerable Vimuthi right from that time. So I said, "Bhante, thank you." And I wrote it quickly on the question Q&A panel. I said, "This is the best gift that our daughter has ever given to us." Aww. So that's how we feel. And we are very blessed to have a daughter who has become a Buddhist Samaneri. We have supported her right from the very beginning, and we are continuing to support. That's we are blessed. It's on behalf of my wife as well. Thank you.
And that's the mother over there. Can you just wait? I won't ask you to talk. Do you want to say something?
No.
Yeah. So that's the mother. Okay. I won't put the nuns in a spot. Okay. All right. Maybe another round of applause for our lovely nuns. Okay, so Ajahn Brahm will be back tomorrow night. So thanks, everyone.
You want one more?
Anybody who wants to go can go, and anybody who wants to stay can stay. How about that?
So are there more questions for the nuns in the basket?
There certainly is.
Oh. Do you all want to finish it? Oh. So do you all want them to finish the questions?
I'm happy to stay.
Oh, okay. Okay, so are the nuns happy to continue? Okay, let's continue then. Yeah. Maybe what time is it now?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock?
Yes,
6 past 8. Okay. 6 minutes past.
Okay, so should we go until 8:15, like what, Ajahn? Okay, all right.
I'd like to answer this one. Where's the microphone?
No. That's my mic, Vera Soma.
It's okay. You can talk.
I just saw this one. Is it off?
Yeah. I just saw this one, so I thought I'd answer this question. And it's, for a lay Buddhist refraining from sensual pleasures, I'm interpreting that to mean sex. Does that mean only have sex to conceive children, etc.? Actually, it doesn't mean sex. It means a whole load of other stuff than just sex. Sensual pleasures means any pleasure that comes in through the five sense doors. So that is like going to watch Thor Ragnarok. That's a sensual pleasure, right? Going for a swim. But it's why? Like, you know, the question is, why is looking at a rose? Looking at a rose is a sensual pleasure because it's beautiful. So when you see it and you perceive beauty, you get a pleasant feeling, and that's a sensual pleasure through the eye door. If you hear music, going to listen to your favorite band, that comes in through the ear door, assuming that you went to, you got a pleasant feeling because you like it, therefore it's a sensual pleasure. So it's more than just sex, right? Massage, things like that. So why is this a problem? Well, if you're very happy to continue to be reborn, I guess it isn't really a problem. But for those of us who don't want to keep being reborn, because, it, you know, coming back to dependent origination, if you are born, then you will suffer, right? If you're born, you get a body and a mind. If you've got a body and a mind, eventually it will hurt, right? The body hurts, the mind hurts. Suffering always follows the fact of having a body. So, if you want to stop suffering, right? Well, the Buddha said there's two arrows in suffering. One is the suffering of the suffering, and if you've got a body and a mind, nothing you can do about that except not get a new body. Now, the second arrow is probably what most people think of as what we're going to get rid of in suffering. Now, the second arrow is the mind's response to the first one. So if I were to break my leg, the suffering of the suffering is the broken leg. That's the first arrow. The second arrow is all the mind's carry on tantrum and complaining about it. Oh no, I don't like having my leg broken. Oh my God, I'm now useless and worthless and hopeless. I'm totally hopeless now I have a broken leg, blah, 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 blah. Right? Now, for some of us, and I was definitely in that category, the second arrow was about 10 or even 20 times more painful than the first arrow. Okay? So this is, an arahant in this life has got rid of that second arrow. They do not get upset. Their mind remains unshaken. Their mind remains undisturbed. Even if you chop their arms and legs off, their mind remains undisturbed. It doesn't mean to say it doesn't hurt. Of course it hurts because their body's there. They've got a body that notices that it's hurting and a mind that notices that it's hurting. But if their mind remains unshaken, then they don't add that second mental and emotional level onto it, okay? Now, if you should want to end all suffering, then you have to not have a body. How do you not get a body? You don't get reborn. Okay? That's the only way. Otherwise, by default, we're all immortal. And we're all just go this stream of consciousness. I mean, this isn't the same body I got born with, right? Right? There was that body, and then the stream of consciousness kept flowing through all the different bodies that have evolved over this life, right? And it'll keep flowing into a new body, depending on my karma, depends on how my mind and my actions, depends on what body I get next. And if I do the right kind of karmas, I won't get another body. Yay! So if it should be that your wish is to not get another body, then what is the cause for getting another body? The cause for getting another body is desire for sensual pleasures. Kamatanha, desire for sensual pleasures. Bhavatanha, desire to exist. Vibhavatanha, desire to not be like that. No, I don't want to be like that. I want to be like this. And all that wanting, 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 is what drives the next rebirth. So the thing is, it's all very well to complain about someone addicted to drugs, but we're all addicted to sensual pleasures. That's why we've got a body. We wouldn't have a body if we weren't addicted to sensual pleasures. If you want to give up an addiction, what do you have to do? You have to stop taking that thing, right? So if you're addicted to sensual pleasures, then sense restraint, right? It doesn't mean you can't notice that it's a beautiful forest. Of course you can notice it's a beautiful forest. But if you start indulging and delighting in it, wow, you know, and like then getting attached to it, I've got to be in the beautiful forest and I've got to not be in an ugly forest or whatever that is. I'm not sure what an ugly forest is, but eh. But, you know, I don't want to be somewhere ugly. I want to be somewhere beautiful. And the more we get attached to sensual pleasures, then we get driven to do bad karmas so that we get to keep our sensual pleasures and nobody else can take them away. Why did that robber walk into my room? Because he wanted stuff, right? And it drove him to do a bad karma. All the bad karmas are driven either by what? Greed, hatred, or delusion. Greed. This is the one. Sense restraint is about curbing our greed. Yeah? That's the purpose. It doesn't mean to say you shouldn't enjoy having a sexual relationship with your lawful partner. That's fine. But if you get obsessed with sex, yeah, then it's an obstacle to having a good and fruitful life. It's that obsession, that addiction, right? If you got obsessed with computer games and all you wanted to do was play computer games for 14 hours a day, yeah, that's being obsessed with a sensual pleasure or whatever. So it's more about letting go of the addiction to sensual pleasures so that we don't run off and get another body, so that when this body wears out and is not particularly useful anymore, it's called death, isn't it? When this body wears out and isn't useful to me anymore, well, if I'm really continue to be addicted to sensual pleasures, then this stream of consciousness is going to rush off and grab a new set of five khandhas, isn't it? Whereas, you know, I can appreciate beauty, but it's okay whether I see beauty or not beauty. It also means that it's okay when I see something that's ugly. That's okay too, because I'm not so attached to sensual pleasures that I'm going to be, my mind's going to be shaken by something ugly. I'm not so attached to beautiful smells that, you know, the smell of the latrine is going to be tremendously upsetting. That's okay. It's just a smell. Yeah. And so it helps you to stay in the middle. It's just a training. It's neither right. You know, it's not wrong to enjoy a rose. It's not wrong to enjoy your partner, unless you're a, you know, celibate nun. Would be very wrong for me to do that. But that's my choice. Nobody forced me to become a nun, right? Nobody forced me to become celibate. I choose it because to have a physical relationship would be a distraction. I just don't want to put energy into that. If I had a partner, then I would rightfully want to put energy into that partner and spend time and energy on that partner. Time and energy that, as a nun, I get to spend on my practice. Yeah? So, yeah, that's the thing about sensual pleasures. I hope that's helpful.
Okay. No?
You had enough?
You had enough? It is 17 past.
Yeah, I think we can call it a night. Maybe if there is, we can check if there are more questions, then maybe we'll keep it for tomorrow. For the nuns?
There are, but I think Arjan can have the note.
Yeah. Except if there are questions specifically for the nuns, then I think he would want to hand it back to the nuns. We can do it tomorrow.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So three sadhus.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you.